Music has a special way of touching our hearts in ways many things cannot. And if you're tuning into this podcast, you probably think so too. On each episode of Classical Post, we uncover a creative mind behind music we find particularly exceptional. Coming to you from New York, Classical Post is created and produced by Gold Sound Media, a marketing and PR agency for the performing arts industry. I'm your host, Jonathan Eifert, creative director at Gold Sound Media, and I hope you find something inspiring in this episode.
This is Jeff Biel. I'm a composer, mostly known for my work in film and television. I've done series such as Monk and Rome, Carnival, most recently House of Cards, and a lot of movies such as Ed Harris's film Pollock. I've also written a lot of concert music over the years and quite a bit more recently. My violin concerto just premiered with the St. Louis Symphony. And last but not least, my gateway entry into music making was a trumpet player. I started out as a jazz trumpet player. And that was sort of the way I found my way into making music. And I play piano, but I've pretty much been self-taught my whole life. I've just played it on all my scores, and it's sort of been a secondary but very important instrument to me.
I want to start with House of Cards, actually, because first of all, I love that series. And I, of course, being in the music world, definitely took note of that. And I'm sorry to say I didn't take note of your name when I listened to the music, but I definitely remembered the music. And I thought, oh my God, this is such a cool score. That introduction and how they were like flying over Georgetown and through the tunnels and whatever. It was just such a cool vibe. And it never got old for me to like listen to it. So when I heard that you had an album and your connection to House of Cards, I thought, oh, this is such a cool thing. So I'm curious if you don't mind talking a little bit about House of Cards.
I'm happy to talk about House of Cards. I'm very grateful. Listen, I have the good fortune of having written music where, whether or not you remember my name or not, I can go almost anywhere in the world. And chances are, if I mention that, people will have heard my music and hopefully remembered it and enjoyed it. And there is a really interesting connection, I think, in House of Cards to, I would say, the last 5 or 6 years of my career in general, because, well, you know, when you do a film score, your job is to really tell the story, right? The music you write should be in the honest to whatever the film is. It's not a personal playground. Having said that, there was something with the whole world of House of Cards, the dramatic setup, that allowed me to express what I would consider in a lot of ways, sometimes more of what was my personal musical voice. And that got noticed too. And so I think that was encouraging and fun for me to realize, like, you know, I've sort of been doing this one thing for a long time here. Maybe it's time to branch out a little bit and do some things that are music driven first and not just, narrative driven by a narrative feature or TV series.
Curious in terms of the connection of the actual visual component with the music. You know, was there any kind of, collaboration with the director or with, I don't know, the powers that may be that inspired your, you know, own kind of cinematic writing?
You know, I actually wrote what is known as the main title theme before David Fincher had even shot that opening, believe it or not. And I did have some scripts with descriptions of what that opening scene was. And they were sort of evocative of the idea of seeing Washington, but maybe seeing it in a different way. Of course, once I had the images into the final version that you hear on the show, I very much was orchestrating to that and sort of working with the choreography of instrumentation, how it was playing around that, the visuals, because it is a very striking sort of marriage of the two together. I'm always fascinated by how this works, like in the human brain, like, when you see a good piece of film and a good piece of film music together with the images, they sort of become inextricably linked together in good ways. And I think that's really fascinating because really the listener, there's a third story that emerges, which isn't just the music and which isn't just the image, but it's the viewer sort of combining those two and creating that sense of it's one of the things, you know, there's very few art forms that could do this, that it completely immerse you in when it's done right. sort of cast a spell on the imagination, I think is what good cinema does.
And I think it did what you did for House of Cards cast a spell, because it does have that eerie, sinister kind of intro, you know, for obviously all of the things that ensued in the actual episode. So yeah, very, very fascinating. Let's discuss a pivotal moment in your career. You have had a storied career in writing a lot of music for various, like you know, with your introduction, with various shows and such. But I'm curious if there was one pivotal moment that kind of was like, I don't know, maybe an aha moment, or one that opened the gates for other things to come.
Yeah, there's actually two. I think the first real epiphany in terms of a composer was, you know, again, I mentioned the trumpet. I was in high school playing in the Oakland Youth Symphony Orchestra. And we had this wonderful conductor, Robert Hughes, and he was also a bassoonist. And I think he loved the opening to this piece, but we took the orchestra to Italy for a tour, and we played Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And I might've heard little bits and pieces of the piece, but really the first time I heard that piece was sitting inside the orchestra. And it's just like my brain exploded. Like the sounds of the orchestration. It's funny because like when you talk about House of Cards, it's sort of complex use of dissonance and this sort of way in which Stravinsky's music transported you into this dark, visceral, and in this case, almost Russian pagan world. It really, you know, I remember Bob gave me a copy of the score and I started studying it. And so that was one. And then the second one, I would say, in terms of a really career defining moment for me, you know, I think I would have had a career, but I certainly would have not have had the career that I've had, would it not be for Ed Harris hiring me to do his film Pollock in 2000. Because that was a small little independent film when I did it. Nobody knew, but Sony bought it, and two Academy Award nominations. Marshall Gay Harden won for supporting, but everybody saw that movie. And in that film, where there were two key scenes where Ed so brilliantly plays Jackson Pollock, paints a painting for about 2 or 3 minutes at a time, and there's nothing else going on except for him in a room, which is not a lot of sound, with the paintbrush, right? Enter music. So, you know, often what we do as film composers is sort of hang out in the background and support, and not try to be at the forefront of the viewers or the listener's conscience. But in that case, it was sort of the perfect pitch right across the plate. It was just my job to try to swing for the fences. And that film, that music really put me off the map.
That's really cool to hear. Let's talk about now the album. Congrats on the recent release of this album, New York Etudes. I'm just really curious to hear about it. Why now? What's the story behind it?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've played piano on my scores pretty much my whole career. And I've loved doing that. I just love it. It's funny because I really am a trumpet player. I mean, that's instruments I'm trained on, the 10,000 hours or whatever. But piano has always sort of been my voice as a composer. But I have not done a lot of things that were piano driven. During the pandemic, I started to really miss music making. You know, I was sort of spoiled. I realized how lucky I was that a lot of the time I just regularly get to sit in front of an orchestra and write a bunch of new music and record it, you know, on an almost weekly or monthly basis, right? So I thought, I really want to double down and get even better at the piano. So I really sort of obsessively started, really, I just want to work on my technique. And then as the pandemic was ending, you know, my manager, actually Fritz at the time, he said, you know, like, what kind of solo piano work? I thought, it's a great idea. You know, I hadn't thought about that. And this was also right after we moved to New York City. This was also a post-COVID change, right? And our piano that's been in our house, in my studio, every whole beginning of the career, I mean, I've recorded in a lot of scores. I've sampled it. A lot of the piano on my scores is this beautiful Steinway O. And we decided to bring it out to New York with us. And my wife said, are you sure you're going to bring that? I'm so glad I did, because it's in our house in New York. And I spent hours and hours just enjoying playing and writing these pieces. And it was, the only other recording I did was early on in my career. I did a record called Contemplations, but that was mostly improvisations. The whole idea of the etudes was, no, these are composed pieces of music. You know, we're actually, I'm just working with the editor on the sheet music that's going to come out. But they're almost like, it's funny because the end result is not, it's not overly complex music, but because I had to filter the ideas through my available technique on the instrument, it was actually quite a fun challenge to try to come up with the musical ideas and also sort of filter them through what I could accomplish on the instrument and sort of make something beautiful. And it was so much fun. I'll give you a secret little, since you mentioned House of Cards, there, the etude number two, which I think is, Sun Surrounds Us. Yeah. It starts out with two chords, and the left hand is a minor chord, and the right hand is a D major chord. And that is basically sort of the first two chords of the House of Cards.
That's so cool. I love that.
I think I was even thinking about that. It's like, yeah, like that's part of like my story now. And that's just the beginning part, and the etude goes all far from there. But there is something about, I guess, I love sonority, and part of the reason I write a lot of the piano or at the keyboard, and I would say these etudes were composed on the same piano I recorded them on. And that's so important, because when you write piano music, it's really about how those overtones ring out when you come up with a specific type of harmony or just a voicing or anything. You know, there's just ways in which writing piano music is so gratifying when you have a really beautiful instrument to write on.
Yeah, the piano, to have to switch instruments is painful for so many artists. So when you have the luxury of sticking with the one piano and moving it around the country, yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I'm actually here in Berlin now, and I'm getting ready to play in London. So I'm here in Berlin, and actually a friend of mine here found me a house to where I could go do some practicing. And of course, it's an old upright. It's okay, but you know, but it's actually really good. Obviously, practice on an instrument that isn't your main instrument, because you sort of get used to the process of quick acclimation is something that every pianist needs to be able to do.
Carnegie Hall is also on your horizon, which is obviously noteworthy. I'm a huge Carnegie Hall fan. That's basically the only kind of concerts that we go to in New York. Sometimes we even bypass Lincoln Center oftentimes just to because we like the programming at Carnegie. So I was thrilled also to see that you are doing Carnegie this June, and it's your debut.
Yes.
So can you tell us about all of that?
Yeah, I'm really happy because, again, speaking of programming, the reason we're doing this concert, which is my original score to this amazing film, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, is that we've been added to sort of as an extra special and finale to the whole celebration of Weimar period of Germany that Carnegie's doing. They're doing a whole festival around the art that was created during this really amazing time, really, in between the two world wars, of course. And there was just so much political, maybe tension and anxiety, but it's often in those spaces. And of course, the Roaring Twenties is before the market crash. So it was just sort of very heady time. And, it's a score I wrote, the original version for a German big band and choir, and I've sort of expanded it for Carnegie. So it's a full big band plus a 12 voice choir, a fourth wall, this wonderful new music choir that started. And I'm so excited. It's going to be June 3rd, and we've got a great, great band. There's some soloists. The choral stuff was probably one of the most interesting things I've updated for the US premiere of it, is that I realized that the voices added so much to the score. I mean, because obviously it's sort of the psychological horror film. So the choruses, sometimes they're like a jazz choir, but often they're maybe like a little more operatic or spooky. Sometimes they're a film score choir. I also pulled out some soloists. And of course, I mentioned the trumpet earlier. You know, I'm a jazz trumpet player. So the idea of using jazz as sort of a vehicle into this film was really fun. I mean, I made the joke when I was courting the band at the power station a few months ago that it's like my image when I was writing this, I guess it's like, what if Alban Bear was like in Vienna and he had a gig like writing for movies and had a big band or something? What would that music sound like? You know, and that's kind of like, what it was inspired by. It's just really weird, you know. I think often think about writing that way. It's like this recipe, you know, where you just kind of you just throw something in and you cook something up. So, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's pause for a second. Are you an artist or work at an arts organization? I founded Gold Sound Media to help you expand your audience through social media. My team and I work closely with clients around the United States, directly shaping their messaging through customized, strategic content. One of our biggest success stories is our work for the Clyburn, where we drove 25 million viewers, making it one of the most watched classical music events of all time. Get in touch to speak with me directly about how Gold Sound Media can help you. Just head to goldsoundmedia.com. Now, back to the show.
Can you, let's backtrack a little bit and talk more about the connection with the Weimar Festival, because I'm very aware of Carnegie's festival. I attended some other events that were in this particular festival. And it is, in fact, there was actually a New York Times article this week. I think it was either yesterday or you know, on Saturday or something. And they were speaking about how wonderful this most recent iteration of this festival concert was in this festival. It was Ensemble Connect, I think it was, on Saturday night. And they felt like various concerts dipped in and dipped out of this theme, and some better than others. Like some had a closer connection than others did with this Weimar Festival. And the Times felt that this last concert, I think it was Ensemble Connect, did some Kurt Weill works, amongst others, had much more of a closer connection. So I guess my question to you is, can you speak to the connection between the music and this festival?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, like, of course, it's original music, but the film itself is a product of, obviously, this film was made in the early 1920s. And also, one of the things I decided, the original commission was actually, again, it was commissioned, a German entity that commissioned it. It was to actually celebrate 1700 years of Judaism in Germany. I didn't realize this, but the first synagogue was actually in Cologne in like 300 AD, which is wild. So the guy that the director of Dr. Caligari, Robert Vine, and also the writer were both German Jews. And so I thought that was a kind of interesting part. You know, Ken, obviously this is a part in Europe where they had to flee. And some of them went to Hollywood and created film music and other places. Some of them, of course, tragically perished, but, for the choir, I actually researched and I found some really beautiful texts of some poets that were alive during that time, and I set some of their poetry. And again, it's just I feel like the words, the way the language was used, also sort of further sort of dipped into that world of the Weimar period. You know, the film itself is really the film to me feels like it's quintessentially Weimar, and I'll tell you why. Because you know, this was also a time in which, you know, obviously, you know, Einstein, the atom was happening, art was happening, but also, you know, Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung, this whole idea of the exploration of psychology and the mind really as this new frontier of scientific study, right? And really Caligari is exactly that. It's an unreliable narrator. It's this whole fever dream of identity and evil. What is the root of evil? All these sort of really heady concepts. And it feels very much a part of that sort of almost enlightenment and awakening in terms of the psychological sort of awakening that happened in the early 20th century in this part of Europe.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I'm so glad that you're part of the festival, because it's a very profound kind of artistic statement, if you will. Last question, how do you want to be remembered in the world of music?
You know, I think I would go back to something really simple, like the piano etudes, for example, because I think, like, this is very much like a post-pandemic attitude, I think. And in a way, I think the etudes represent that. I think when it all's said and done, what is left? What is left that's of value? What is left that feels like you've lived your life well? And everybody creates for different reasons, but I feel like my purpose as an artist is to somehow create to move an audience and also to create something beautiful that is meaningful and not necessarily complex for its own sake of its own complexity, but somehow, hopefully, profound in some way and gives people a sense of the world that's maybe beyond what the banal, normal experience of life is, right? And, you know, to me, that's what art is. Art is about transcending the banality of a lot of life, which is pain and suffering and boredom and effort. You know, it's just little respite of beauty and transcendence. And I hope that there are maybe a few minutes or a few seconds in my work that give somebody that. If that happened and happens in the future, I'll feel like it was a job well done.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Classical Post. If you loved it, give us a 5-star review as it helps us reach more people. Also, remember to hit that follow button in your podcast app to get notified of new episodes.